Welcome to Big Blend Radio with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio with Nancy and Lisa. It is the fourth Wednesday with Ward Time. Ward Heinrichs is a San Diego employment attorney, and he joins us every fourth Wednesday to keep us up to date with California employment laws. Sometimes we get into the federal laws, too. And sometimes it's just about San Diego having their own employment law because they're allowed to. So we're welcoming him back to the show today to talk about two California laws designated to create more diversity on corporate boards of directors. So Senate Bill 826 passed in 2018 and Assembly Bill 979 passed in 2020. And now both of these laws are facing legal challenges. So the article that Ward wrote for this is up on blendradioandtv.com now. You can also go to his website, which is bestemploymentattorneysandiego.com. So welcome back, Ward. How's it going?
It's going really well. These laws, I told you, I predicted that there's going to be equal protection challenges to it, and it's happening. But it's really interesting for a lawyer. It's very interesting how these laws have progressed and changed and been challenged. So outside, gorgeous day, a little cooler than it has been, but this winter has been so weird. Some days are like extra hot. Some days are freezing cold.
We're finding that in the Pacific Northwest too.
It's cold in them dar hills.
And then all of a sudden the sun comes out. In fact, this weekend, Nancy and I got outside. The sun was shining. We're in Eugene, Oregon, as we record this. And we've got the coolest dog, Jessie, who, you know, she may pop up and say hi anytime. So we're hoping she may. But the sun was shining and the garden is starting to bloom. There's lilacs here. So it reminds us of Julian up in the mountains in San Diego.
Yep.
And so it's all sunshine. And Nancy and I had a really hard time going in and keeping up with our deadlines. We're like, there's sun. We can sit outside and have a glass of wine in the afternoon in the sunshine, and we don't have a boss. So there we go. So you know what we did. but this is great. I'm fascinated by this because when you hear about creating more diversity on a board of directors, that sounds really great. It helps women and those who are underrepresented, right? So represented. I promise we're not having wine right now, but I could soon.
We'll see.
You never know. So when you talk about this protection clause, explain that, because that's where I'm thinking, I thought that was a good thing for diversification.
So these laws that SB and the Assembly Bill as well have been challenged. Essentially, now there's other little challenges going on, but essentially it's what we call an equal protection challenge. So the legislature passed two laws that allow more diversification on boards. No, require it. And that's really the problem. It requires it.
Oh, requires.
Yeah. And so 826 is the first one that allowed or required that boards that were publicly traded and essentially centered in California or had a major office in California to have a minimum amount of women on the board. And it depends on how large your board is. So the challenge to that is, well, you're favoring women over men, and our Constitution says you can't do that under equal protection. So all these, and same thing happened to the SB 979, which said that you had to have underrepresented groups on boards. Again, requirement, and you know, various people of color as well as people with different sexual preferences.
But what if you don't have anybody that has the merit? I mean, you don't want just anybody on the board because they're a different color or a different religion or what have you. You want people on the board that can do stuff. I mean, do you have to go get somebody? Do you have to hire somebody new to get them to be on a board?
Well, you would have to have people available who would meet this requirement, meet this law, the requirements of this law, to be voted on the board. Boards are voted for,
yeah,
not just appointed. And so they'd have to be available. And but then the people, here's one of the challenges. There's a shareholder who's saying, hey, look, I can't just vote for anyone I want. I can't vote for the best person I want necessarily, because you're saying some people have to fit into this group. And I think the idea is I'm willing to vote for anyone as long as they're good.
Yeah.
But you're forcing me to vote for someone, and it's not because they're necessarily good. Now, they may be perfectly great. But that's the challenge. It's saying, hey, look, you're making me vote for someone based on the color of their skin,
mm-hmm,
or their sexual orientation, or their gender. And the equal protection says you can't do that. So that, you know, that's kind of the flip side of the equal protection, and some of the 13th, 14th, 15th amendments of the U.S. Constitution. They say, hey, you can't pick someone, you can't subdue someone because of their color.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped protect the slaves who had just recently been freed.
Mm-hmm.
But when things start shifting and you start saying, hey, now I'm going to not only, you know, not hurt them, I'm going to promote them with legislation, mm-hmm, that could exclude another group, which is, even though that group may be, you know, richer, la-di-da-di-da, who knows, just better off. It doesn't matter under the Constitution. You can't do that. And that's the problem with these.
They actually do it,
even though, you know, we're saying, well, maybe there are too many white men on boards. You can't just say, well, that means you got to have this many of something else, because that would violate equal protection. And one of the cases has been decided, at least at the trial court level, and it did strike down the second one, that the second law, 979, that required people of color, people of color and sexual preference to be on the board. You had to have a certain number of them on the board.
Wow. And see,
to me, that violates equal protection.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense. To me, it's like, I think more people want to see that. You want to see, you know, more diversification.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Absolutely. And I want to make that clear on Nancy and I's side for that. You mm-hmm. know, we want to see that. But it's really true. Sometimes, in especially a very specific kind of industry, what if, I mean, you've got to go through, is there the education? Is there all of, you know, and I'm not saying anybody of color or, you know, gender or sexual orientation or any of that doesn't have the education for specific things. But what, you know, when you get on a board, you know, that's kind of an interesting thing to say, okay, only this amount of people, because it could be specialized.
Mm-hmm.
Certain companies, I mean, they're really specialized in what they do. And what if you can't find someone that you want on the board, because a board is advisory, they're doers. I mean, that's an important thing when it comes to a company.
Well, I mean, that's an issue that is underlying all of this. I haven't heard that that's being specifically argued, because honestly, mm-hmm. it's just not a popular thing. They're trying to, most of society is behind the idea that we should have more diverse everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And that makes sense. The problem is, well, you can't legislatively direct that to happen.
Yeah.
And stay clear of equal protection. It's very hard. It's just very hard. But there mm-hmm. are companies that are already doing this. I was talking to you before we started mm-hmm. doing the cast here. New York Times is an example of a company that has made their board on purpose more diverse. And it probably mm-hmm. reflects, I'm going to guess, I don't know who's on their board and all that stuff, but probably pretty closely reflects the percentages in society. So. Mm-hmm. There are companies that are already doing this kind of thing. And I think regardless of whether these laws survive or not, I think you're going to see it more and more and more over time.
Good.
because
it's, yeah, it's just like the Academy Awards. But the Academy Awards need to be more diverse, yeah. Right? Oh, here we go.
As we slap people around. Let's hear it for diversity. That was a hard slap one right there.
I know that did not help. That did not help.
But counterproductive. Jeez. But you know, it just seems to me that it's more of a matter of education than it should be a matter of legality at this point, because I don't think any company should be forced to have people on a board that don't merit being on the board, mm-hmm. because then aren't we back to your token this and your token that?
Well, could be. I mean, and that could be one of the problems of requiring it. I'm not in a position to select boards. I mean, I guess as a shareholder, I've voted on boards every once in a while. Not paying that much attention. Yeah. But I just go back to, well, the equal protection really says you can't do this kind of thing. And I know, and I think that it's a wise clause in both the California Constitution and the United States Constitution. And I always kind of, I like to trust the marketplace of ideas of winning, and sometimes it takes longer than people want it to, but it's really the best way, because when that change is made, that means the heart of the society has changed, and you know it.
Oh, I like that. Mm-hmm. That's really true. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just do.
Yeah. I'm a libertarian. I believe in that, you know, get the ideas out there, argue them, and then let everyone make their choice. And, right. You know, some people don't agree with that, but that's me.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like the diversity is so, I think it's crucial. And, you know, when you're right, like, let people do what they need to do as they can as well. Because what happens, I mean, boards are a little different than regular of hiring of people, right? So, I mean, it's, you know, it's like a regular business. Let's go to, you know, your regular restaurant. Suddenly, this is it. You can only hire this. Mm-hmm. And that would really be rough, especially right now when employment's all whacked out. Like, everybody's like, I'm opening my own business now. You know what I mean? It's like really changing right now. So it would be really difficult. With boards, I know you have to be elected in, but can, you know, this kind of clause also put pressure on people that are already in a board seat, and then maybe some people are like, man, that person's really not doing their job. Let's use this to kind of try and put pressure to get them out. You know what I mean? Kind of make them either step down, or, you know, or would you not see that? Or
I haven't maybe.
Voted I mean, for really, anybody on a board either.
When you say the clause, I assume you're talking about equal protection.
The two bills. I mean, these bills and they passed, would, you know, you've already got a board. So do you have to wait for people to be stepping off or be asked to leave or their time runs out?
No, it was immediate. Not immediate. They gave it about a year to start taking full effect. So the first year for the gender one, which passed 2018, you had to have one woman on the board. I think it was by the end of 2019, beginning of 2020. And then later, I think within another year, you had to have more depending on how many people are on the board. So if you had four or fewer, you had to have one woman. If you had five, you had to have two. If you had six or more, you had to have at least three women. You could have more if you wanted, but you had to have at least three women. Now the board could be 50, could be a huge board, but you'd only have to have three.
Oh, so you didn't have to oust somebody from your board.
Yeah, you could add.
All right. So if you don't expand the board, yes, you would have to oust someone. If you expanded the number of the board, then you would.
But that seems just as bad as not having diversity on the board. It just seems like, okay, because we need a woman on the board, Charlie, you're out.
I don't know how you do that. But it could give you an excuse to get rid of Charlie if you don't like Charlie. So I'm just saying. Well,
again, two sides of the coin.
Yeah.
One wants Charlie to stay, the other one doesn't.
So get rid of it.
It just seems like, you know, it just seems kind of like if the board members are all doing their job and they're good, but oh no, suddenly you have to have an extra board member. It'd be easier to put an extra board member on.
Yeah, they probably can do that. I mean, it's going to depend on their bylaws and things like
that.
Yeah. Generally, you can expand your board of directors.
Yeah, so that you don't kick somebody off. But then you could find your board doubling within a couple years, because as these laws go into effect, all of a sudden you have to have all these nationalities that you don't even have.
No, but it's, but I mean, it's when you start expanding your board, that is now going into more paperwork, more, you know what I mean? So to me, like, I wouldn't want a huge board. I mean, even like nonprofit, what about nonprofits? Does this affect nonprofits too? Or just,
I believe it does. You know, that's a good question.
Yeah.
And I'm going to just hesitate a little bit, but I'm pretty sure it does. I don't think nonprofits get a buy on that. The qualifications that I saw were it's a publicly traded, so you have to be publicly traded first. Yeah. And a lot of those, you know, nonprofits aren't going to be publicly traded.
Yeah.
So they'd be good for that reason. And they have a major office in California.
Do you ever work with nonprofits?
This could hurt California a lot. This could hurt California, don't you think? Well, there's some companies that are, okay, our main office is not going to go over here. No?
I don't think so. Not based on that. I think they just roll with it and make it happen. But, and the other reason why it's not going to, if it possibly could hurt California, it's not going to, because it violates equal protection. I really, we'll see. We'll see where this, you know, I'm kind of predicting. But one case has already been decided at the trial level, so it's going to get appealed, I'm sure. And so one case has said, no, this violates the Equal Protection Clause. And honestly, I think it does. I just don't, the way they're drafted, I just see that it violates equal protection. I think it does. Hmm. So I'm going to guess that all the upper appellate courts are also going to end up having to say that.
Hmm.
Could be wrong.
But when you think about, the Equal Protection Act, that's something that's important. And if you don't use that, then doesn't that kind of mess up our Constitution and how things happen? Mm-hmm. So like, in a way, that's there for a reason. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you got to follow what Equal Protection says. And I think it just says you can't make people do these types of things, because you're going to violate the laws against a protected class.
So the federal law would be stronger than the California law?
No, it's different. All right, so if California is allowed to have equal protection clause that is what you might say stronger, it might have more effect on society, it might be more, you know, strict. And that would be okay, and it probably wouldn't violate the United States Constitution. But you're right. If the California didn't have that, the United States Constitution was certainly governed, and it still does, but maybe it's outdone by the California Constitution. Then there's more protections based on the California Constitution.
Wow.
You see that all the time in employment law. You know, if you're... discrimination laws protect employees better than those are enforced. If they don't protect them well, then it's the federal one that will be enforced.
Okay.
With wage and hour. If your overtime protects people or workers better in the state with your state overtime law, then you don't have to really worry too much about the federal one. But if yours doesn't, then the federal one will apply.
Oh, okay.
Wow. This is amazing. Like this is like going back to school and learning all the different laws, man. I don't know how you keep up with all of them.
Well, and it's kind of weird because they specifically said that those kinds of laws, the discrimination and the wage and hour, if you have more protection in your state, that's cool. But not necessarily, I mean, not all laws are like that, because the federal trumps, federal does trump state law. So if they didn't come out and say that it's okay, then there you'd have an argument and say, well, the federal trumps, and it only makes overtime, or it only has a minimum wage of, I think it's what, $7.50 or $9 an hour. I don't even know, because California is so much bigger, I don't even care. And so you could argue that the lower one applies because it's federal law. It trumps California law. But they've specifically gone out of the way to say, well, that's not the case. If the states do protect more, then that's good.
Okay. That's interesting, though, you know, and California is a huge state. I mean, we've just driven it. We know
it's a big state. Oh, it's a big state. It's like the eighth biggest economy in the world. Mm-hmm, I mean, the governor I forget exactly the number he used, but something like that.
It's, you know, and then you think, yeah, with all the boards, because also you've got all the harbors and, you know, when you think about all the ports of call, that also brings in these kind of companies that are publicly traded. And I was, you know, earlier I was going to ask you when we talked about nonprofits, do you work with nonprofits? Because that's going to be a whole interesting thing to have employment law issues within a nonprofit. Ooh.
I have advised a couple nonprofits, but I haven't done, you know, litigation for them or anything like that. And it's just been like small projects and, you know, no more than a handful over the years. So I would not call myself a nonprofit attorney. I'm an employment attorney and most of those laws do apply. So I can still advise, but no, I'm really not a nonprofit guy.
The volunteers that are, you know, that work at nonprofits, do they have the same protections as employees? Do you know?
Well, yeah, and that's a good question. If you qualify truly as a volunteer, then most of the employment laws will not apply to you. Now, there are some like discrimination, harassment, that will still apply.
Okay. Mm. That makes sense.
You can actually work for free if you qualify as a volunteer and you have to meet all the requirements. But if you do,
just like independent contractors. Yeah. We should do that as a show. Okay. If you do this, are you an independent contractor volunteer or employee? It would be kind of
You mean guess what they are kind of thing?
Yeah. We'll have to have a
that'd be fun.
Cute. Yeah. Because I mean, it gets so like, what, you know? But but there's volunteers who also work part-time in a nonprofit, and then there's employees within a nonprofit. And, you know, nonprofits still need to pay their employees and, you know, manage the minimum wage and all of that. So it's kind of interesting. So, but I think their boards don't get paid. I don't believe the board of a nonprofit don't get paid.
I think that's depends on how their articles are written up.
Yeah, it depends. Each one can be different, but... Yeah, that's, I mean, it's okay. So going back to what we're talking, going back on track here. So look at Amazon with headquarters all over, you know, the country. So depending on, I mean, do these new laws or bills, when you say if they have to be in California, do they have to be started in California? But if they have, you know, headquarters all over and offices like Amazon, how does that work?
Well, that's an interesting question, too. That's one of the challenges. They've said, hey, look, well, one of the arguments, I wouldn't say it's not really a legal challenge in and of itself, but it says, look, there are companies that may have some type of presence in California that qualifies them under these laws, but they're a national company. So you're going to force them to do what California says, despite what the other 49 states have to say about it. So that's been talked about already. And, you know, I'm gonna have to, I think I wrote it down exactly, publicly traded companies with headquarters in California.
Cause they can have more than one headquarters.
I don't know how they define headquarters, honestly. Yeah. So, but I think it's not, I think it's possible to have more than one place throughout, if you're a national company, to qualify as a headquarter in California.
Maybe it's just in that side, but it's fascinating. And I really do like, you know, regardless, this opens up that conversation for diversity. You know, I really do think it does. Like, hello, absolutely. You know, people, and we are getting better, you know, minimum wage and things like that. I think companies are, you know, I think what happened with COVID really got people to think. I know in the tourism industry, how are you treating your clients, your staff, you know, are you paying them the way they need to be, you know, things like that. So I think the conversation just kind of blew up really in a way, and things are looking better for employees. And, you know, the people who own a business have to make hard decisions, you know, but when, you know, actual bills come to place, it's like, damn it.
You know, I think
it makes it harder for a small business, you know, for sure.
Well, and that's where I get a little sensitive. I have to say, I don't, the big companies, that they're going to take care of this. Now that may mean the consumers have to pay more because some of those costs are going to get pushed along. But if you're willing to do that as a consumer, and California definitely appears to be willing to do that, then that's okay. But it really is the little companies that, now I don't think this law probably affects them too much. Most of them don't have, you know, big boards of directors. They have themselves as a board of director or whatever it is. You know, it's really small, one or two people. But they're not nationally, you know, they're not traded publicly. Mm-hmm. So they're just not going to, this won't affect them. But I have to say, a lot of the regulations, I think, have their biggest effect on small businesses. Mm-hmm. It makes it really tough. I just see, and you know, I take both kinds of cases. I still do take some employee cases, but I do most of my work with employers now. And I see both sides of that coin. The problem is when a small business has so much paperwork to do that they just get buried with it and they're just not going to do, what happens is they're just not going to do it. And then mm-hmm. they really might get stung with a nasty lawsuit or the labor commissioner coming in or, you know, EDD, who knows? And those, you know, I feel sorry for most of them. I think most of them are really trying their best. Mm-hmm. They just can't do it all. It's a small business.
Small businesses, I mean, there's so much red tape on them, and there's some red tape that does really need to be, you know, in other words, if you own a car dealership, don't start pouring oil down the drain. You know what I mean? There's some environmental ones, there's some serious ones, and
then there's really, others that are
protections that need to have real protections for staff. But there are some laws and I'm just like, you know, it's getting to be really tedious for small business. And yet if we don't have small business, we don't really have much of a business backbone, honestly, if we're owned by all these corporations. Really, at the end of the day, it's getting to a point of, then we don't have all the great ideas anymore. Then we don't have,
innovation goes right out the window.
Yeah, you know,
because if you have a better idea than your boss, good luck with that.
Yeah, so I think we're on a very it's going to be interesting over the next 5 years where we go in this country in regards to entrepreneurship and small business and this balancing out because of these huge corporations like Amazon and Google. And I mean, Google's in your backyard. I mean, literally. So you've got these huge multi-billion gazillion, you know, dollar companies. And then you have small businesses who really, they just, you know, not necessarily need to be a multi-billion dollar company, but want to get by, make a decent profit, they want their employees to be happy too. But if there's so much against them, that you're right. People will just go, oh, screw it. You know what? I have to actually do my work. Eventually, these people that create these businesses don't even get to do what they're supposed to do. They're so
busy. Why they went into business, because they like doing this. They don't get to do this. They're always having to do that. Like another really good example is taxes for small businesses. The tax laws in this country for small businesses it's crazy. Half the states.
Don't you get us in trouble.
No, half the states have an agreement. No, half the states have an agreement with the national government that when somebody pays IRS at tax time, it filters down and each state gets a little bit of that money. So the person only files federal tax. The other half of the states, depending on which state, you have everywhere you do business, and a lot of them, even if you make only $15, you have to file a state return for every single one. Nevada is cool because you don't have to do any of it. I vote for selling in Nevada. Because, I mean, sometimes just filing your tax return costs more than the taxes that you owe, but you still have to do it. And the laws are nuts.
Well,
it's the little business has big challenges, no doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's why Ward's there, everybody. Don't ignore the problems because it gets worse. Why? It does.
No, do not. No, that's,
Compound just like interest. And we want, you know, interest to compound in a good way. We want that to grow in the bank account. I'm just saying that's how it should be. But well, this is going to be interesting to watch what happens. There's a lot happening, apparently.
It's very interesting. And the only one trial court's made a ruling. There's another one pending that'll come out soon. It's on the other law. It's on the 979 law. And then we have the two other big cases. And then there are some smaller cases still out there that are, and they're all they're all challenges on these two laws.
Wow.
So it's going to take a while to get the final answer on these things, but it's starting now.
Wow. So basically, the board has Law TV going on. He's watching. It's like a boxing match, right? For you, it's like, okay, ding, that one won, this one ding.
Yeah,
place
no,
your bet.
I like this stuff. Yeah, I like to follow it.
Okay. Too. Do you guys as lawyers, do you guys place bets on court cases?
No, I've well, never bet on your own. And because you know about in baseball, when you bet against your own team, you know, that's a big
deal. Yeah. Problem. Yeah.
And no, I've never bet on it.
Lisa.
I've just wondered. Come on. You know, it's like,
I bet you Vegas has odds on them.
I bet. Like, you see, that would be
interesting. I'm telling you,
right?
Nevada's a cool state. You can do whatever you want.
Exactly. That's funny. Everybody, it's always fun with Ward on the show every fourth Wednesday. Catch him here on Big Blend Radio. You can keep up with our shows at bigblendradio.com. Also, read his articles on Blend Radio and TV.com. And of course, just call Ward. Go to bestemploymentattorneysandiego.com, but call him too. Mm-hmm. Not just go online, right? Call.
Call.
Ring that phone.
Call.
I know. Some, you know, people do answer phones these days, right?
Yes.
I respond to emails. We answer our calls too. Yes. Well,
call
whatever
Ward.
You want to do, just let us know.
All right. Thank you, cool. Ward. It's always fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it was fun. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.